From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I am your friend Claude, here again with...
Just Jamie.
That's right. And on today's show, we're going to attempt to shoot and swing our way through the complex urban jungle that makes up all things Spider-Man. Maybe not all things, but several things. Several amazing things about Spider-Man. But first, as is traditional here on the show, let's find out what we've been up to. Jamie, would you care to start us off?
Well, I have had some more free time than usual. I am going to be changing jobs in January. So I've had some late nights and, you know, kind of been doing what I want to do for some different periods of time. And one of the things I've been doing is watching a lot of random, sometimes bad, sometimes good movies. Usually using either Shudder or Tubi to find good sort of random things to watch. So there were a lot of things to choose from because I knew you were going to ask me about what I've been doing. So I just chose one out of the many. And I chose this one because it's kind of infamous, but it was not nearly as bad as I expected. And that is the movie Chud. C-H-U-D, Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers.
Chud. Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dwellers. Chud. They're not staying down there anymore.
Came out in 1984. Story by Shepard Abbott. It was directed by Douglas Cheek. The screenplay was by Parnell Hall. None of these people have huge filmographies or bodies of work. But I have to say, I was expecting to see something like on the level of Troll or, right. You know, like the type of thing you see on like the worst kind of thing you see on like Mystery Science Theater or something like that. But I have to say, this movie was way more competently made than I expected it to be. Maybe it's just because my expectations and my scale of judgment are a little bit different in recent days or weeks because of some of the schlock that I've been subjecting myself to. But this came off to me as a perfectly competent, kind of fun bit of nonsense.
Yeah, well, I've always referenced it and made jokes and still use the word chud to refer to small children. But I've actually never seen the movie either, so it's encouraging to hear you describe it in a way that makes it seem like you might actually enjoy the experience.
Yeah, I can enjoy the experience of watching very bad movies. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm well known for that, but this one to me wasn't even as bad as some of what I subject myself to on purpose out of irony. And like, this was good. I mean, it's got kind of a fun cast. Martin Cooper, or no, that's a music guy. John Hurd, Daniel Stern. Oh. So most people know who it's like Daniel Stern, sort of a pre, I don't know how much of a star he ever became, but sort of, right. This is before he hit his peak. What's interesting is that John Hurd is also in it, and John Hurd plays the dad in Home Alone. Right. Of course, Daniel Stern is in Home Alone. Then the other main star is Christopher Curry. He doesn't have much of a career. The thing I knew him from, he actually isn't a Home Alone as well. He plays FBI agent Stucky in Home Alone 3. Oh, Home Alone 3. That's okay. just to be clear. But the thing I knew him from was as Rico's father in Starship Troopers, which is a movie that I love. There were a lot of familiar faces in the movie. But like I said, if anybody who's into sort of like B-movie schlock, like you could do a lot worse than Chud. And I think it has a reputation that's... It kind of goes beyond so bad it's good into just it's plain bad territory. And I actually thought it was very watchable.
Well, like I said, this is a very encouraging reaction and review. So I might actually stop going past it when it's suggested to me on the various streaming sites.
I say give it a rewatch. You might be surprised.
Cool.
What about you?
Well, I have taken to crossing the barrier into the realm of social media that I had previously considered myself too old for. And that, of course, is TikTok. That was going to be kind of my line in the sand. They wanted me to Facebook, and I did it. They wanted me to Snapchat, and I did that too. You wanted me to Instagram, I did it. But that was where I drew the line. TikTok just didn't make sense to me. And it was really annoying, and it still is. Like, it's pretty, there's a pretty steep learning curve if you really want to, you get good at it and take advantage of it. But, you know, I kind of jumped in, and it's been useful for, I guess, shorter form pieces of entertainment. And for me, that's still damn near 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But I've been using it for solo, like Saturday morning cartoon and serial reviews and reminiscing videos. Of course, intended to be weekly, but never quite gets there. Probably at this point, not even bi-weekly. But I stuck to the weekly schedule in October because I had this Halloween theme with all the serials and the shows I was watching. And so I will probably continue developing that. It is kind of a, you know, it branches off. It's a spinoff of our show here.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't yet seen that or checked that out, or, you know, you also might have been hesitant to get on TikTok, well, follow me into the pool, into the middle deep end of the pool. And so far they have all been on my solo channel, Your Friend Claude. It just teaches me that I need to buy more cereal and more t-shirts, novelty t-shirts.
But, out of wardrobe, huh?
Getting there. Certainly out of Halloween wardrobe. But I still have a few rather straw-grasping connections that I can make. So stay tuned for that. Well, now that you know about the time we've been spending, let's find out how the world is trending. It's time for...
3, 2, 1!
Pop! 3, 2, 1 Pop is, of course, the part of the show where we take 3 current pop culture headlines and rank them as we see fit. Today, number 3 focuses on the major movie fourth quarter for 2021, consisting of things like Venom and Dune, which came out in October, Ghostbusters Afterlife and Eternals, which came out in November, and Spider-Man No Way Home, Matrix Resurrections, and a little movie called Nightmare Alley, all in December.
Yeah, it's been a busy last quarter of 2021. I have to say, like, all of these movies I want to see or wanted to see, I'm definitely falling behind. You know, there's still some reticence about going to the theater and when do you go. And I try to, like, I've gotten into a habit of sort of waiting till you get into that second week when things aren't as full. I've seen Venom. I did see Dune. Haven't seen Ghostbusters. Haven't seen Spider-Man. You know, Matrix is still coming. Nightmare Alley is being released as we speak here right now. I want to see all of these things. I definitely feel myself falling behind. It's a dense release schedule here at the end of this year. And these are not the only tentpole films of the year. Earlier this year, we had Shang-Chi. We had Black Widow from the MCU side of things. Obviously, a couple more MCU movies now at the tail end of 2021. Plus all of these other franchises or, you know, single entries. So most of these movies tend to be doing okay. I'd be curious to see what happens through the rest of this year, the last couple of weeks, literally, of 2021. Because, again, 2 of these movies are just now coming out, on top of a couple that are still in theaters. So it's going to be interesting to see sort of like which ones get the short end of the stick in this dense crowd.
Well, some of the movies from that crowd feature characters and stories that will eventually end up making appearances on streaming television shows. And since the MCU is basically the pioneer of that kind of character sharing, if you will, that brings us to our number 2 story this week, which is that the second to last episode of the 6-episode season of the Disney Plus streaming series Hawkeye features a giant reveal that only just Jamie has the scoop on for this show. What do you got?
So, again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen episode 5 of Hawkeye, and you don't want to hear what I have to say, skip ahead. If you don't mind, listen up. throughout the series, you know, Hawkeye and Kate Bishop are dealing with the tracksuit mafia, who are ostensibly led by a character from the comic books named Echo. But there's a lot of intrigue with the other characters and who's really financing the operation, who's calling the shots, etc. Episode 5, that is revealed to be, without a shadow of a doubt, it's not suggested, it's not hinted, it is said that it is Kingpin. And the picture that they show is Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin. He doesn't appear in the episode. One character shows a picture to another. Says, oh, this is who we're dealing with. This is the big guy that they've been hinting at. It's Kingpin. So that's the big reveal for episode 5. It's expected that Vincent D'Onofrio will be back playing the part in episode 6. The show Hawkeye has a lot of balls in the air right now. A lot of character stuff going on. Just introducing Kingpin now. So we'll see how they tie it all up in the last episode. But to me, what this suggests is that they're using Hawkeye. Maybe they will continue to do this with their Disney Plus live-action TV shows. They're using Hawkeye as the linchpin to connect some slightly divergent tracks of Marvel cinematic/TV storytelling. Because previous to Disney Plus live-action Marvel TV shows were the Netflix live-action Marvel TV shows. Now, these shows are not... They're not canon. They are canon. The characters in those shows would talk about the Battle of New York. They would reference things. So they are very much a part of that universe. But it was tenuous at best. I think that can be advantageous because you can tell your own story. I can see how it would be hard to tell a story about sort of like street-level intrigue in the same universe that superheroes are fighting giant aliens in the sky.
Right.
So I think that... There are advantages to keeping a little bit of separation between one and the other. But I think eventually this had to happen. I think the fans kind of want it to happen because those Netflix shows, at least to me, a few of them anyway, not all of them, are well thought of. And I am excited to see Vincent D'Onofrio back as Kingpin. I'm excited to see Charlie Cox come back as Daredevil.
Right.
I'm excited to see the character of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. I can do without Iron Fist, and I have nothing against the Punisher end of that part of the universe, but I could take or leave that myself.
Yeah.
You know, your mileage may vary. But I, for one, think that some of those things were left a little bit... There were loose ends with a lot of that stuff. And I am happy, excited, and hopeful that we see some of that come into the MCU, if for nothing else, and just tie up their character arcs and give those characters a nice send-off as the MCU overall moves forward.
Yeah, I was pretty high on most of those Marvel Netflix shows. I got pretty into, I would say, the vast majority. And yeah, the way when Disney Plus became a thing, those shows were pretty abruptly scrapped.
Yeah.
And like you said, kind of in the middle of larger ongoing stories. And I think we've all seen rumors about Charlie Cox's Daredevil kind of popping up somewhere. As far as I know, those are still rumors.
Neither of us have, as we record, seen the most recent Spider-Man movie.
Right.
So there are rumors that he pops up. We've managed to avoid those spoilers. By the time you hear this, maybe it'll be well known that he is or isn't in the movie.
But so far, this Kingpin reveal is the only like official tangible piece of that is actually happening. That door is being kicked in.
Right. And it reminds me of what Disney Plus has done. And we've both talked about it on the show before with the Mandalorian being sort of the central hub through which they are connecting these different universes of Star Wars.
Right.
Because you have the prequels, sequels, and the original trilogy, but you also have the animated series and these characters from these sort of, like I said before, divergent parts of the universe are being brought together in The Mandalorian in a pretty efficient and well-executed way in the Star Wars side of things. So hopefully Marvel can kind of do the same thing as well and as efficiently, bringing together some of these things for the MCU. Like I said, they're all canonically connected. The main MCU movie series, that is, the Netflix shows, obviously the new Disney Plus shows, Spider-Man's connected. Technically, he's still Sony, but you know they have legal agreements that make it all work. So it could be that they utilize Disney Plus to bring all these things together. The one loose end that I think everybody imagines is, besides the rest of the old Netflix shows, the one other big loose end would be X-Men. And how is the MCU going to bring aboard the X-Men? Are they just going to start from scratch? Are they going to introduce it through, you know, what's been done previously with those actors and those characters as presented in the X-Men movie franchise? I don't think anybody really knows that yet. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there.
Indeed it will. Well, since you mentioned how Star Wars has been used as the model for how to connect the previously unrelated elements of a larger universe, it seems as though it might be happening once again. And real quick, spoiler alert for this one as well. It's just a rumor, but if you'd like to avoid this, skip ahead now. Because at number one this week, the new Star Wars series, Book of Boba Fett, seems to be kind of set right in the same time and place as The Mandalorian. And that will be what we get from streaming Star Wars this year instead of The Mandalorian. It is rumored that much like Mark Hamill came back to do a de-aged Luke Skywalker in the season finale of The Mandalorian, Harrison Ford might be coming back to do something similar, playing Han Solo in the new Book of Boba Fett show.
This is interesting news. I hadn't seen this rumor until you mentioned it before we started the show today. I'm surprised because, you know, Harrison Ford is legendarily grumpy about it most times. I mean,
he openly seems to hate the Han Solo character.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes he kind of is ironic about it. Like, he's still very willing to joke around, and he's done bits on late night talk shows with Chewbacca kind of stuff. Like, so he seems to, I don't know, like, if his grumpy sort of this public grumpy persona is a put on or whatever it is, you know. He always wanted to kill off Han Solo in the old movies, and then he came back and killed him off in the Phantom Menace, The Force Awakens. Yeah. And, you know, you always kind of got the sense, like, okay, he is really done. So I'm surprised to hear that this is a rumor, and I'll be even more surprised if and when it actually happens.
Right. I was not. In the interest of full disclosure, I was not planning to partake in the Book of Boba Fett myself. I have not subscribed to Disney Plus for pretty much since the end of The Mandalorian. There's just nothing on there that's really compelling me to keep going with that. And this seemed like something that, you know, obviously I would probably enjoy, but it wasn't compelling me that I had to see it. But now, whoever's responsible for leaking this or spreading this rumor, they're probably going to get me to do it just to see if it happens.
Yep. And that's a big part of it too, to get, you know, right. You always need to get another boost of subscriptions and all that sort of thing. So that could be a part of it. I've maintained Disney Plus. I've watched all the Marvel live action shows that they've done.
Mine was since the end of WandaVision.
Yeah. Because did you watch Captain America and Winter Soldier?
Nope.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier,
I missed that one too.
And you didn't watch Loki.
Nope.
So you've missed out on all that. So you got a lot to catch up on,
right?
If you choose to. I've maintained Disney Plus. I've got a couple of teenage kids. We still watch Disney movies, even though they're getting old and too cool for that. But they're not getting too cool for it because they are cool and they'll watch stuff like that. But anyway, but also on Disney Plus, I still like, you know, I like to watch the Star Wars animated shows. I'm still catching up on Rebels.
Yeah.
And actually, I just started season 3 of X-Men, the animated series.
Nice.
So we're just getting into the Phoenix Saga, which is a 5-parter, which is just blows my mind that they did that in a Saturday morning animated show. But
I still have trauma, so have PTSD from actually waiting every week for that to finish. It seemed like it took a year.
I mean, a 5-episode arc is a feature-length animated movie when you put it all together.
Yeah.
That's probably how I'm going to watch it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Because they start that season with a 2-parter.
Yeah.
Which is a Wolverine and Hiroko or Kiriko.
Lady Deathstrike. Yeah.
And then they go into a 5-parter for Phoenix Saga. And then later in the season, they do a 4 or 5-parter for Dark Phoenix.
Oh, that's right.
They were really trusting a youthful audience to be able to do that. Anyway, I'm getting...
Thank God.
This is all sort of a tangent. But anyway, so that's one of the reasons I've maintained Disney Plus, is to watch stuff like that. So
that's fair.
I've been keeping up with Hawkeye. One more episode to go to that, like we already talked about. And then, when the Book of Boba Fett comes, I'll be ready for it.
Yeah, I think once I fire it back up for that, I'm going to probably just go back and hit all 3 of those shows or however many it is by that time.
Yeah.
Oh, since all we've done is talk about Marvel superhero characters. let's get to today's main topic. In honor of the release of Spider-Man No Way Home, we have each picked our two favorite Spider-Man related things from, I guess, the entirety of the character's existence, or at least our lifespans with the character. I suppose I will start us off.
All right.
And I'm going to go way back and...
Wait a minute. Before you even start, I'm going to type something into my phone, okay? And we're going to see if I can predict it correctly.
Ah, Captain Confidence over here.
Okay, typing. Good. I'm done typing. You can see that I'm done typing. You confirm. All right, go ahead.
Okay, well, it is my very first experience with anything Spider-Man related whatsoever. And that, of course, is the early 80s Saturday morning cartoon, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Iceman and Firestar.
Yes. And of course, I am predictable.
I nailed it, everybody.
So this is my first introduction to anything Spider-Man. My first memory of the character of Spider-Man, but also my first memory of anything Marvel, anything Stan Lee, and Saturday morning cartoons in general. So it was Spider-Man and the 80s Incredible Hulk cartoon kind of played back to back. And I remember seeing this in 1985 when I lived in North Carolina when my dad was in the military. And for some reason, it just left such an impact on me. Like, what is this? So I would have been three. But that is how Spider-Man swung into my life. And it is famous for being... it's a Spider-Man-led adventure that was originally supposed to be Spider-Man and Marvel's big fire and ice characters, Iceman and Human Torch. However, the legal rights to the Human Torch were kind of shared and owned by several entities at the time. So rather than dive too deep into the legal swimming pool, they created a new fire-based character. And they were very progressive by today's standards, even back then, because it was a female character named Firestar. As a 3-year-old, and even later, years and years later, I had no idea that this character was just created for this show. And,
sure.
You know, kind of viewed, I wouldn't say negatively, but sort of as cheap, or as sort of almost a character to be mocked. But I think in the context of the show, she works great. I'm a big fan of the character. I love the show. I love the theme song. I love the cheesiness. Everything's great. They have this, Peter Parker is this college student, this struggling college student in this, living on his own with his friend, Bobby Drake, Iceman. And yet they have this, sophisticated computer equipment hidden in like revolving bookshelves and furniture in their apartment. You know, like every awesome superhero enclave.
They've got powerful friends.
Yeah. And this is before they were hinting at any sort of relationship with Tony Stark or anything like that for Spider-Man.
Right.
But the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends show is also notable because it's the first time we see a lot of the crossovers that Marvel still does to this day between characters. You see the X-Men popping up on this Spider-Man show. You see Captain America popping up. You see, you know, a ton of these Marvel characters and in one-off episodes and things, but
sure,
they are it's a Spider-Man show, but they were like backdoor introducing you to these characters that you might not otherwise have been so widely exposed to, because I mean, in the early 80s, X-Men hadn't yet become this kind of cultural phenomenon. It was
right.
Still kind of obscure, but that's my big thing to kick off the list here.
I had a sense that that's what you were going to choose, because I know that you're a big fan of that show. I don't think I've ever seen an episode of it. I was aware of it. I just, but yeah, the weird combination of characters put me off. I didn't get it. Like, even at some point, whenever I became aware of the show, I was still aware that Iceman belonged somewhere else.
Right.
Spider-Man in an apartment with roomies like that. However young I was when I first became aware of the show, all that stuff seemed wrong and turned me off of the show. So I never really watched it. Maybe on accident, the episodes might have been in syndication on After School or something like that. So yeah, I've never really dove in. I've never sort of like gone back and tried to watch a couple episodes just for the hell of it. Maybe I should.
It's worth it. I think it is on Disney Plus.
I think so, yeah.
I just got lucky that was my first exposure to all these characters. So I didn't question any of it. And, you know, once you learn anything about any of them, you can see why people were a little skeptical.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Saturday morning's good for that. What is your first Spider-Man?
All right, so mine, I kind of went back in time a little bit too here, so I'll go in sort of chronological order with these exposures. The first one I'm picking is an issue of Spectacular Spider-Man, the comic. It's a completely unimportant issue. It's almost entirely forgotten, I would think. It doesn't really lead anywhere. But to me, it was important because it came in a blind box of comics that I got as a kid. I think my parents got it for me, and it basically represented my comics collection as I neared 10 and moved into my preteen years. What was in that box were my comics, period. And so this is one that I read a lot of. And they gave it a little bit of a different title. They actually call it The Cosmic Spectacular Spider-Man.
Hmm.
It's issue number 160. It was written by Jerry Conway, and the art is penciled and inked by Sal Buscema. So it's The Cosmic Spectacular Spider-Man. It was January of 1990 that this came out, and I got it like right then, so I'd been about 8 years old. And basically, Spider-Man is endowed with cosmic power from, where does he get it? I can't even remember. He briefly obtains the powers of Captain Universe and the Enigma Force.
Whoa.
And he has them for essentially two issues. In this particular issue, he has to fight a robot, a completely uninspired visual design for this robot, which this is just a terrible thing to do on a podcast, but I'll show you a picture of it by showing you the cover. It's totally uninspired as a robot design.
Yeah.
And it's just this, the robot crash lands and he finds it under the water and it's controlled by Dr. Doom. And there's a whole thing about how people are afraid of Spider-Man. And now he's got this vast power and he gets angry and he smashes the robot to smithereens and he's lifting a car and the people inside the car are asking him not to hurt them, even though he's saving them. So it's, you know, the typical sort of Spider-Man, drama, you know,
right. I'm misunderstood.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of like cranked up to 11 because he's also got these cosmic powers. So he can fly and he can shoot energy bolts out of his hands and his spider sense, like almost knocks him unconscious because it's too powerful.
Oh, geez.
So they don't seem to have explored this. Like I said, I was not reading the Spider-Man series at this time. This was one solo issue. The next issue was not in the box. I didn't like get these on a monthly basis.
Right.
So I don't think the story really continued on far beyond this. It's interesting ground to cover. Like, what if Spider-Man had these, you know, next level powers, still trying to be like, you know, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man with the power cosmic. They don't seem to have explored it too deeply. And like I said, this is a completely forgotten, unimportant issue of the comic, but it just happened to hit me at the right time and right place, where I read it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I had a few issues like that of various comics as a kid too. And yeah, it's interesting what it does to your imagination when you're forced to only stay within the limits of that one issue.
Right.
And like they hint at what's coming next or in a different thing or like
yeah,
next month. And this, it's usually like a totally different title. You have to like collect issues from like three or four titles to tie together like a whole story arc.
And especially, this is 1990. So you're almost at the zenith of that kind of thing. You know, Spider-Man had The Amazing Spider-Man, The Spectacular Spider-Man. This story.
So many.
Yeah, I happen to know that this story crosses over with, you know, it had Dr. Doom in it. So there's some Fantastic Four crossover.
Right.
They'd be like, oh, these powers, they my spider sense now almost knocked me out. And then there'll be a little notation that says like, see Fantastic Four issue number 8, you know, whatever it
is.
And it's like, how could you? And I'm just like an 8-year-old who got a blind box. Like I have no resources available to me to look into these things. So it was difficult. But yeah, you just had to sort of like learn to love the art and imagine in your head how any sort of loose ends would be tied up in the next issue.
Yeah. Usually forever left to wonder.
Indeed, yes.
Well, my second and final pick for my favorite Spider-Man thing, memory, influential piece of my childhood is very odd and obscure, but I believe starting in 1990, just after the action figure company Toy Biz got the license for the Batman, the Tim Burton Batman movie, they somehow also got the license to make Marvel Comics figures. I have several examples of both on the wall as we speak.
Uh-huh.
From just right about almost, they ran concurrently. And the Marvel line was called Marvel Superheroes, and as a part of that, they had a Spider-Man role play, like, children's set, like a mask, like a chest plate.
Of course.
I think a belt, and I think like a suction cup shooter that was supposed to be like a web shooter.
All right. Not Silly String. That'd be the thing now. Yeah, you see a lot of that now.
They loved those suction cups, because that was in the Batman role play set, too.
Right.
But this Spider-Man set was, it just, I think it made such an impact because it was the only thing like that we really had as a kid, where you had like a mask to it, like a, almost like a complete outfit. You know, you supply your own like blue pajamas underneath it or something.
Sure. Of course. Yep.
But you know, you could almost complete the transformation, and like we all took turns wearing that so many times, and that thing was beat up and well loved. But I just remember it hanging around in like the toy box for years after we used it, and like the mask getting like misshapen.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, that the Spider-Man role play set is something that was a coveted piece of our mutual childhood with my siblings, and just an odd, you wouldn't see it made today the same way. I mean, these costume things have come so far since we were kids.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about, this is hard plastic molded. Like, you put it over the front of your face. Like, now they've got, like, you can just go buy a fairly accurate cloth whole head Spider-Man mask.
Yep.
And it's like a throwaway, like, $12 thing in the kids in the toy section now. And this was like a boxed giant set. Probably cost $40 or something back then. But yeah, it was just, it was always fun to put that on, and it got so much use that I remember we had to start tying the chest plate on with a piece of yarn in the back because everything just wore out.
Jeez.
But it was fun to pretend to be Spider-Man, even if Spider-Man was basically armored in plastic.
Some kind of body armor.
Yeah, exactly.
I never had a lot of the role play stuff. I was always about the action figures. I would kind of build costumes out of this and that, you know what I mean? I got this like robot hand thing, then I'll put a belt across my chest and hang something from it. Now I'm a sci-fi guy.
Right.
I did have a Batman. It was like a Halloween costume. So, and I had you know, that had a chest plate and it had the cowl and everything. So I got a lot of mileage out of that. Never Spider-Man though. I have to say, just to backtrack on this whole topic, Spider-Man has never that strongly clicked with me. He was never sort of at the top of my list. He was never my favorite. I know that he's like the ultimate relatable hero. That was the whole point of his creation. And I really appreciate what the character is supposed to be. But he was never sort of top of the list for me. So in some ways it was difficult to go back and be like, what's the most important Spider-Man thing for me? Well, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
for me, but I've learned to appreciate a lot about the importance of, what his character underwent sort of as an arc.
Yeah.
After the fact.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, even though he was Marvel's big, like, flagship.
There it is.
Two separate. Even though he was Marvel's big flagship superhero, he was never my go-to superhero. You know, you go in phases where you like things more.
Of course.
Now and then. Spider-Man was almost never, like, my number one, regardless of, like, his presence in pop culture. But because he was such a presence in pop culture, obviously, like, he shows up somewhere in your experience.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, I think that's why my picks are, I don't know if they're totally obscure, well, one of them. But they're not, like,
you know, we had talked off air before about the super successful mid-90s Spider-Man cartoon, and neither of us picked that.
Right.
And that was everywhere.
Yeah.
I had the toys from that, too. I watched it all the time. And I think it's good. It's just not the things that left the biggest impression on me.
Right, right.
And my big Spider-Man things are fleeting things, like, you know, like I said, the ones I have, and like we both had that Marvel Comics Superheroes Guidebook. He's on the cover of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things like that. Like
he's always front and center in like the Marvel Comics Encyclopedia.
Yeah.
All that kind of thing. Like he was, yeah, like you said, like he was their premier character for 30 years plus.
Right.
I mean, you know, sort of like Wolverine was important for a while when the X-Men kind of hit their peak, but Marvel always comes back to Spider-Man. And I think it's hard to deny that. And, you know, Stan Lee's like premier creation. And
right.
I think that's a big part of it. Like I said, like the point of the character is about that sort of the real world struggle and balancing that with the superhero nonsense. And I don't want to say that no character ever did that. I don't want to give Stan Lee too much credit here.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it was pretty unique at the time.
Yeah. And even, I mean, just as an aside here, since we're on the topic, as a technical honorable mention, I think that the other big Spider-Man impression for me is as a production logo. Remember at the end of the Muppet Babies, they have Marvel Productions, and he would drop down on top.
Absolutely,
of that.
That is a bit. That's a huge point. Yeah, like because you'd see that outside of Spider-Man himself.
Yeah, it would have nothing to do with superheroes.
So true.
He's just at the end of the thing, and you're like, wait, is that Spider-Man? Huh.
Weird Silver Surfer version of Spider-Man, yeah. Like all smooth and weird. All right, so I guess I actually have to give my second pick here. So this is where sort of I get out of that retro zone. This is what sort of like helps me appreciate Spider-Man. And I have to say, I'm choosing this. I don't want to sound like I'm disparaging the MCU. There's obviously I like the MCU. There's a lot of things I like about it. In terms of Spider-Man, I like Tom Holland. I'm excited to see what the most recent Spider-Man is. I have not seen it as of this recording. I plan to soon. But I do think there's some things that they've missed, gotten wrong, not understood about what the character is supposed to be. So that brings me to my second pick, which is the 2002 Sam Raimi directed Spider-Man film.
You're changing. I would do exactly the same thing at your age on May 3rd.
Not exactly.
You're invited to suit up. With great power comes great responsibility. And swing into action.
I'll take you on a roller coaster.
Do too much. You're not Superman.
Rated PG-13.
This movie, and I've just recently sort of gone back and revisited it a little bit. It really understands the character orders of magnitude better, I think, than what the MCU version of the character has been so far. And I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of the weird Tony Stark connection, you know, in lieu of an Uncle Ben or whatever, they have this Tony Stark thing. Okay, maybe I will go down the rabbit hole a little bit. You know, it's less about the relationship. Like, I get they're trying to do something different than Uncle Ben. Like, Uncle Ben's already gone by the time we meet Spider-Man. So yeah. He's got this father figure of Tony Stark. Then Stark dies, whatever happens, happens. What I don't like about that connection is that Spider-Man, as soon as we meet him, immediately it's like, here's some Stark tech. Now you've got an Iron Spider suit.
Absolutely.
Like, it totally smooths over what most of the struggle of Spider-Man is, like we talked about before. It's his struggle to balance the superhero stuff with the real world.
Right.
I know they still get into that a lot, and that's the whole point of this most recent movie, is that he wants to erase people knowing who he is, because it does kind of cause issues with MJ and all that sort of thing. But it's like, you got a nano yeah. Iron Spider suit in your pocket at all times. And it just seems like it kind of, like I said, it seems like it smooths over some of the struggles that the character usually undergoes. So, but again, that's a tangent. The point is the 2002 Sam Raimi directed Spider-Man, the sequel to this, the one with Dr. Octopus, Spider-Man 2, for a long time was like recognized as the best comic book superhero movie ever made. It's very good, but I do like this one because it does give you that origin. And at this point, we hadn't drowned in origin stories yeah. over and over and over again. Right. So it seemed pretty fresh. You know, it's fun that Marissa Tomei is Aunt May, but like this has old people playing Uncle Ben and Aunt May, which makes more sense.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi does his Sam Raimi thing. Like I was just, like I said, I was just watching it the other day. And it's like the edits and the camera angles, and it's all so unique and different. It's just very Sam Raimi-ish on a big budget. And the movie's just a lot of fun, actually, but it still covers the ground it needs to cover and understands the character, like I said. So I've grown to appreciate it even more. Again, not to disparage the new ones, but I've appreciated it more in contrast to those.
Right. I remember seeing that in the theater, and I don't know, I guess just kind of being struck by the fact that there was finally a Spider-Man movie.
Right.
Which is just a weird headspace to imagine now on this side of it.
Right.
After there have been, I don't know, 10 Spider-Man movies?
Yeah, I mean, 3 in that series. Then there were 2 Amazing Spider-Mans, so that's 3, 4, 5. Now we're up to 6, 7. This is going to be 8. Plus he's appeared in, you know, the Avengers
right,
movies and things
yeah.
like that. So a lot of appearances.
It feels like you couldn't even imagine there not being a Spider-Man movie at this point. But I mean, if you go back to before the Sam Raimi movie existed, there were so many rumors of, oh, it's going to happen this year, and all these false starts, and yeah, the infamous Canon Films was supposed to put one out.
Oh my God!
Like James Cameron at one point was supposed to be working on a Spider-Man movie.
Right.
And there was even like a promotional announcement, like a teaser trailer, for the Canon one made up at some point.
Within this unsuspecting city, history's greatest experiment creates tomorrow's greatest superhero, Spider-Man the movie. A live-action spectacular directed by Joe Zito, based on the characters created by Stan Lee.
And, you know, just they crumbled and
yeah,
lost
yeah.
all their money, so that never happened. But it was one of those things, because, again, before this is like before the internet was a widespread thing, too. So you would see something about it in an article in a magazine and then just never hear again.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What
yep.
happened to that?
Yep, yep.
So after years of that, all of a sudden, we're looking at live-action Spider-Man. And... yeah, it was. I mean, I always have these nitpicks with like design choices and visual choices and things. But as far as capturing the tone and the narrative and the essence of the character, I don't think it's been done better.
Yeah, and as you were talking, I was thinking too. You know, it reminds me of looking back at like the Richard Donner Superman versus more recent versions of Superman.
Right.
You know, the Raimi. For all sort of like the weird touches that Raimi can bring to a movie, and he's known for making pretty like low budget, you know, super brutal horror movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But he brings like a certain aesthetic that he is capable of putting on screen to Spider-Man. But it's all like it's bright, it's well lit,
yeah.
It's not gritty, it's not grimy. It to me, it's a very, like you said, it's a very true. True to form incarnation of the character. There are some weird choices, like he has the organic web shooters instead of, you know, like wearing something on his wrist. You know, I think this was probably, unfortunately, the beginning of the textured suit thing that began happening across, you know, superhero movies. Cause
the first one I remember.
Yeah. Cause X-Men movies had come out and they were wearing, you know, smooth leather, which really isn't any better. Given the choice, I would take like his textured Spider-Man suit that at least
for sure.
looks like Spider-Man. But yeah, it was kind of the beginning of that trend. But I mean, I think overall, yeah, the tone, the brightness, the lightness, while still doing a good job of conveying his like struggles.
Yeah.
You know, there's a scene, the last thing he actually says to his uncle is like, stop trying to be my father. And then he leaves him. And then the next time he sees him, he's dying.
Yeah.
And that's pretty emotionally intense. If you really like kind of study, you don't have to study it that hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's easy to forget because you know, you're watching, but that really captures his struggle, a lot better than I think what's been done more recently.
Yeah. It strikes a chord, I think, to provide like his motivation a lot more efficiently and powerfully.
Yeah, and they don't drown you in the origin story, by the way. Like,
yeah.
They get through it pretty efficiently, but they also don't treat it as like this happened and now the movie. It's
right.
woven into the movie well. The movie tells its own story while giving you the classic origin. I think it's just, again, not to repeat myself, but it's efficient. It's
woven deep. Like a spider web, perhaps.
Oh,
I think there's also, if I remember right, there's a decent amount of like practical. Web
yep.
swinging and
yeah.
you know those scenes yeah
yeah a lot of stunt work, you know, when they have a big fight, you know, with Green Goblin, where there's this big ceremony, you know, and there's a lot of practical stuff going on. And that's the thing, like the technology had reached. I think the swinging CGI Spider-Man is pretty good in those movies, considering their age at this point.
Right.
I always feel like the human form in CGI is one of the toughest things to do. I don't know why that is.
Definitely.
You know, obviously, Jurassic Park did like super hyper realistic dinosaurs in 1993, but sometimes the human form still doesn't look right.
Yeah.
On screen, you can see it in Marvel movies today, but I think like him swinging through the city is pretty good, and like you said, they mix that in with a lot of practical stuff too. So.
Yeah, I think that's something that is missed. From, I mean, I know Tom Holland does, he's legitimately acrobatic and can do a lot of the Spider-Man poses and flips and things.
Right.
But I still think that you miss a lot of the practical approach in today's movies, because even though he can do it all, it's still just laden with CGI swinging. And
yeah. The MCU movies makes a lot of weird choices with CGI. And again, I don't want to turn this into like just ragging on those movies, because I don't dislike them.
No,
really,
I mean,
don't.
I'm looking forward to seeing the new one.
Yeah, me too. I totally am. But I just, you know, we've talked a lot of times about, like, Spider-Man suits in movies, and you really liked the suit that he was introduced in Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
And that suit was really well received. Everybody pretty much loved it for its comic accuracy. It had some black graphics on it, but the eyes kind of were captured well. It wasn't textured. It was smooth.
Yeah, that's what I liked.
And they immediately got away from that, like, almost as quick as they could.
I know. It's like, so frustrating.
He immediately, like, started wearing, like, a darker blue and then now, like, the Iron Spider stuff.
You know, like you said, Tony Stark came right in and, oh, let's upgrade.
Yep.
We haven't even seen this one yet.
Yeah, so there's that. But there's also the thing where, like, why can't Tom Holland be wearing the Spider-Man suit?
Yeah.
What about the Spider-Man suit makes that hard to wear?
Right.
Except for the iron part, the shiny version. Like, the old suit, you'd have Chris Evans standing there on set in his Captain America costume.
Right.
Everybody else in their physical costumes. And there'd be Tom Holland wearing the CGI,
yeah, like,
you know,
a mocap suit.
Yeah, the mocap stuff. Why? I don't understand why he couldn't be wearing a suit. It's just a weird choices like that. They do it sometimes with Black Panther too. Like, Chadwick Boseman would often be in the costume. Then they totally wipe it with CGI because they didn't want his head to look big, because when you wear the helmet, you know, his mask is more of a helmet.
Yeah.
So then it makes his head look too big compared to his body. So they would CGI it all to match it up the way they wanted it to. It's like, you have a chance to have a guy in a physical suit that looks good.
Right.
And you still wash it out. So again, for the like fifth or sixth time I've said, I don't mean this to be like a ragging session on the MCU.
No.
But I think it just, there's some contrast that shows you why, or what there is to like about stuff that was done before there was any thought of an MCU.
Yeah, like this kind of thing happens often when, I guess, new versions of things that have been kind of made or used, like characters have appeared in the past. You always see things from about the old versions come get kind of refreshed when the new one comes out.
Yeah.
And I mean, so here we are. It's a perfect opportunity to go back and reexamine some of that stuff. And I know for me, it's been a long, long time since I've seen the Raimi movies. So I'll probably be inspired by you bringing this up.
Well, good.
That's two. We're gonna go back to back with Chud and Spider-Man's first Sam Raimi movie. It's a weird double feature.
It's a fine choice right there.
Is Chud also in New York City?
Yes, it is.
Well, there's the common bond. Well, that'll bring us to the end of our show. So as we swing away from this topic, we will pause to wish everybody a happy National Maple Syrup Day. Seeing as how we are from one of the premier areas of maple syrup in central New York.
Maple Festival in our parts every year.
Every year. You haven't lived until you've had fresh, tiny sample cups of maple syrup boiled from a giant vat of sap before your very eyes.
Indeed.
I have been your friend Claude.
And I've been just Jamie.
We'll see you next time.
Later.
Nerd Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network.